Good morning. This is Tommy Branch, Chairman of the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is the October 22nd, 2020 meeting. At this time, we've got five board members here in chamber, and we have one board member, Hunter Hall, who is on here electronically. I want to just check. Hunter, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And we should have members of the public and petitioners here electronically. I know this is a little odd, but I'm going to ask that you raise your right hand and repeat after me. You swear or affirm the testimony you'll give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. If you could just nod or somehow give an affirmative. If you say no, please let us know why you would not be able to take that oath. All right. At this time, I'm going to ask to have an invocation done by Mr. Merriman, and I'm going to ask for us to that are in chamber to remain standing and face the flag for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Father, we just thank you for today, the time to be here. Lord, the time to carry on the business of this city. Father, I pray that you'd be the prevailing spirit here today. Give us wisdom to make the right decisions. And Father, bless the people of this city. Bless every marriage and family in the city of Savannah and Chatham County. Father, we ask you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You may be seated. Are there any notices, proclamations, or acknowledgments other than the recognition of the former board member? Okay, thank you. Well, I want to just take a moment. Does staff have anything they want to prepare for that? Or just, I just want to take a moment to let everybody know, if they don't know, this is such a tough time during COVID and what we're dealing with, that a lot of people would normally know about this, that, since everybody's here and we have members of the public online, I just wanted to recognize Eli Caritasis, who, I don't know all about Eli's life, but I know he served in a number of different fashions and functions throughout his life with the city. I believe he was Mayor Rusakis's chief of staff. Isn't that right?
I'm not exactly. He was something.
It's before my time, obviously, but he also has been on a number of boards. I've been on this board, I believe. This is my sixth year, and I've served longer with him than anybody. He's been on or off the board at various times. And, I really liked Eli. Eli had his opinions and he stuck to it. You always knew where he stood. And I just really disheartening to hear that he's passed away, but I know he's on to a better place. His children and his grandchildren, and I know he's got at least one brother, and I think maybe his sister. We just need to keep them in our prayers, because I know it's got to be very difficult to not be able to recognize loved ones as you would like to during this time. I know they're dealing with that right now. You can check online. I know on Facebook, his son has been utilizing it to help get some information out. But I'd just like us to have one moment, to have a moment of silence for Eli. Okay, thank you. Is any other board member or any member of staff wishing to say anything else in recognition of Mr. Caritasis? All right, thank you. All right, items to be requested to be removed from the final agenda. I see 760 Old River Road. Is that still requested to be removed? Okay. So let's see here. So let's move on to the approval of the minutes, September 24, 2020. Can I seek a motion?
I make a motion to approve the minutes from September 2020.
All right, that's a motion by Mr. Merriman, seconded by Mr. Condon. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Merriman?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
And I'm a yes, so it's unanimous. The minutes have been approved. All right, right now, it looks like we just have two items on the regular agenda, and that's 504 East 48th Street and 715 East Park Avenue. That's a variance and an appeal of the decision of the zoning administrator, respectively. It looks like those are the only two items. We got the one item being removed. So I would like to seek a approval of the final agenda. Mr. Griffith has moved, seconded by Mr. Brown. All right. Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Mr. Yes. Connor?
Yes.
Mr. Merriman?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. So the agenda has been approved. We're going to go ahead and move on to, there's nothing on the consent agenda. So 504 East 48th Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a brief reminder for all members of the board to make sure you have your microphones on when you're asking questions, and also a reminder for the public that when it's your time to speak and you're called upon, please use the raise your hand feature, and then we can get your audio plugged into the webinar. Up first today, we have 504 East 48th Street. The petitioner is requesting approval of a variance to expand a non-conforming use, which is currently used as a duplex, by proposing an addition on the rear of the building. Here is an aerial map of the subject property, bounded by 48th Street, Washington Lane back behind it, and Atlantic Avenue to the west, and Paulson Street to the east. The petitioner would like to add a 290 square foot addition on the rear of the existing residence, which would be increasing non-conforming use. I briefly wanted to show you a couple of photos of the existing rear of this building, just to kind of orient everyone where they would be looking to add the addition on. So this rear facade that has the lattice work, that would be removed, and the addition would be going on the rear of the building right here. So that was from one angle. This is a little bit further back. And here you can see the lane back behind it and the fence row. This is from the other side. So the addition would not encompass this kind of cutout in this area. That would all remain the same. The bump out is only this facade that's nearest to where the picture is being taken. There's one last photo also showing the fence line here as well. It's important to note that section 11.4.2b states that a non-conforming use shall not be enlarged or expanded to occupy a greater area of land or of a structure unless authorized by the Zoning Board of Appeals in accordance with section 3.24, relief for non-conforming uses and structures. And that's going to be a very important component that we're going to come back to here shortly. Wanted to show the non-scaled sketch that was provided with the application. So you can see here, they're proposing a fence back on this line here with parking for two cars that would be gravel. And the important part to notice here is this thicker line where my mouse is located, that's the existing back wall of that property. And the proposed addition encompasses this space right here, which would be 290 square feet on both, it's 290 square feet total, and it's both stories. So it'd be a two-story addition. Based upon the non-scaled sketch of the addition provided with the application, the applicant is indicating that they would comply with the setback of 20 feet from the rear lane and it would meet ordinance requirements. However, upon further examination through site visits, photos, and measuring, it appears the addition would encroach that rear setback. So here, because it is non-scaled, you know, there's just an arrow indicating that it would be set back 20 feet from the rear proposed addition. However, when you pull up the Sages property finder, and just an approximate measurement from the rear of the existing building to that property line is showing 23.7 feet. So the 10-foot addition that they would be proposing would obviously encroach that 20-foot rear yard setback. So that's an important part to clarify there. The subject property is currently 28% lot coverage, and the proposed addition would increase the lot coverage to approximately 34%, which is still in keeping with the maximum of a 40% lot coverage allowance. So the important part, I'm going to actually pull up the report here just because it's important for the board members to see all these sections. So per Article 3, Section 3.24.8, as it relates to the expansion of a nonconforming use, the Zoning Board of Appeals shall make a finding that the request does comply or does not comply with each individual criterion provided below. If there is noncompliance with at least one of the criteria below, the request shall not be approved. So I'll read through here and provide staff comment as we go along, and then be happy to answer any questions. The proposed nonconforming use of a building is not detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and the adjacent uses or general vicinity by reason of any or more of the following: the number, area, location, height, orientation, intensity, which includes things such as traffic, noise, odor, or hours of operation, or relation to the neighborhood or other adjacent uses. Staff has found that the encroachment into the rear setback is not in keeping with the orientation of the other homes on the block. Just to pull up this reference here, you can see most of the rear lot lines or rear facades of all these buildings are pretty much in keeping. This one has an accessory structure, but we're talking about just the primary structures. The use of the expanded area has the same operational characteristics as the existing nonconforming use. Staff has found that the expanded area would have the same operational characteristics as the existing nonconforming use. The general site standards of this ordinance relating to the original use are complied with to the extent possible. Staff has found that the general site standards for the RSF5 zoning district would not be adhered to since the addition would encroach upon the rear setback. The design of the building cannot readily accommodate a permitted use of the zoning district in which it is located. Staff has found the design of the building can readily accommodate a permitted use in the RSF5 zoning district or continue to exist as a nonconforming duplex minus the addition being proposed. The building has not been subsequently redesigned to house other uses. Staff has found the building has not been redesigned to house other uses. It would keep continuing operating as a duplex as the petitioner has indicated. Staff, therefore, for the above mentioned reasons, recommends denial of the requested expansion of the nonconforming use by a rear addition for the following reasons. The variance requested would be an expansion of a nonconforming use. However, it fails to meet the ordinance requirements for enlarging a nonconforming use. The proposed addition would encroach upon the rear setback by at least 7 feet, and also adequate justification from the ordinance is not present for staff to recommend approval at this time. I'd be happy to answer any questions board members may have.
That
Mr. Merriman,
the 23'7", who got that measurement? Where did it come from?
That was myself. Staff provided that. We were just using the Sages viewer. So it is not survey accurate. It is important to note that, but it's a close approximation as to what the distance would be.
So the applicant is saying that what they would do would maintain, what does it say here, 20 feet setback, and you're saying that it's not that, it's 3 more feet than that?
Correct. So a non-scaled drawing was provided, so we can't verify anything the applicant has provided. They're essentially just saying the 20-foot setback proposed addition, but they're not even showing arrows indicating that this is, you know, 20 feet or 10 feet or anything like that. So we took it upon ourselves in that site visit, just seeing how close it was in person, the existing rear facade to that lane, and then using the aerial map to provide that measurement, and we concluded that there's no way it can be in keeping with that 20-foot rear yard setback.
Would the addition come out any further than the structure next door? The little apartment there?
Talking about the accessory structure next door? Structure. Oh, there's one on both sides.
Yeah. Right. I don't believe it would come out further than the accessory structures, but it's important to note this wouldn't be an accessory structure. This would be part of the primary structure.
Correct, but yeah. I'm just asking you, it's not going to come out any different than those two,
no.
Right?
No.
Okay.
It'll be different in the sense that those are on the, it looks like zero lot line, and this will be, you know, off the lot line.
Right, yeah. Right. It actually won't stick out as far.
Yeah. Any other questions for staff? Mr. Brown?
I was just looking at the photographs and built by the building, and it's sort of a salmon colored brick, and I assume that they're going to use the same material for addition, but I think what concerns me is that the one story one unit building is just a shade under 1400 square feet, and the house is 20, just a shade under 2,800 square feet, and they're going to add an additional 145 square feet per floor on the rear, plus parking, and that's in addition to already a non-conforming use. So I have to...
I'm not following the beginning statement as far as square footage. Are you referring to the existing footprint of the home?
Yeah, the existing footprint shows that the rental unit is 13,900, it's 1,400 square feet, and the house itself is 2,800 square feet. But by adding, and that's non-conforming, and if you're adding another 140 square feet, 145 square feet per floor on the addition, that totals 290 square feet.
Correct.
And it's already non-conforming. That just makes it more non-conforming.
Correct. And that exactly. And that's where we do have that criteria in the ordinance, those steps that I walked through, that we do allow for the enlargement of non-conforming uses if it meets all of that criteria. But if even one of those criteria can't be met, it recommends that it should not be approved. Because that's what it states in the ordinance as far as the process that we officially have to follow.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'll just add, it's not non-conforming because of the square footage. It's non-conforming because of the setback.
Actually, it's non-conforming because of the use. So the use of duplex is not allowed by the ordinance, but it's existing non-conforming, so we can't say you can't do that. We're allowed to, they're allowed to continue doing that. However, you can't expand a non-conforming. The setback comes into play just on the applicant saying, hey, we're doing a 10-foot rear addition, but then when we got out there and we measured out, we are saying that it would encroach upon the setback. That's nothing the applicant has provided.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for staff? Mr. Griffith and then Mr. Brown.
Can you just pull the actual variance request back up and let me read that? I mean, it's just the request is just an extension of a non-conforming use.
That's correct. Yes, we followed up with the applicant just to get some more clarity as to what their request actually was. It wasn't exactly clear to staff when it first came in. It is just the expansion of non-conforming use. That's the variance that they're requesting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Brown?
The other question is that the non-conforming use for the rental unit is now increased from 1,400 to 1,600 square feet, which adds again to the nonconformance. But my concern is about the parking. Is that approved? It can't be perpendicular parking. It would have to be parallel parking if you're only.
And that's what they're providing. They're providing two parallel parking spots in the rear of the property by adding gravel to the back.
Is that consistent with the other properties in the neighborhood?
That's permissible under the ordinance. Doesn't really relate too much to the variance request they're doing. They just provided that information to us just to say that we are providing parking.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Condon, after I ask one question real quick, you know, the applicant in the application says that it's going to continue to be a duplex, but that basically his family is going to be living there.
That's correct.
And so has the discussion been had with the applicant to say, hey, you know, y'all don't need the pre-existing non-conforming use if y'all are planning on using it. You know, I guess has it been discussed with them that, you know, they're not necessarily going to be renting it out? And I don't know. I mean, there's a use and then there's what's actually there. I mean, there is a duplex. It's got two kitchens and things like that, right? But can we walk through that issue? Because I feel like that could be a sticking point.
Mr. Chairman, this is Marcus Lawson for the record. So,
that was a little muffled.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think the way that we looked at it, Mr. Chairman, was that the use of the property is and has been a duplex. So this particular owner is intending on continuing to use it as a duplex. It just so happens that each of the units will be occupied by a family. An adult child and the parents. But moving forward though, the building itself will continue to be a duplex. So we have to operate under the impression that a future owner, you know, may use it as a traditional rental, as Mr. Brown was describing earlier. So the family aspect of the ownership did not come into play in our decision making, just the use of the building itself and the fact that it is an existing duplex.
What would it take on the city side to, if let's just say that they said, hey, we don't need to have the right to have that duplex rented out in the future or anything like that. We want to just, you know, get past the idea that it's a duplex. What would they have to do?
They'd have to physically convert the building to a single family residence.
So, I mean, that would mean taking out any firewalls. And, I guess what I'm saying is, well, they have to get the kitchen out of there. I mean, that's what, you know.
Yeah, that would be the major thing that would have to be done, is that you, in order to be considered a single family residence, at minimum, one of the kitchens would have to be removed.
Okay. But that's, there's not a protocol where they could, waive or, give up their non-conforming status,
Well, they're non-conforming because the property is the building is a duplex in a district that does not permit duplexes. So yeah, that's the reason they're non-conforming.
So you're saying is there's I guess I'm just, some houses could be so big that they have two kitchens in them or something, two sinks or mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
I'm kind of a little bit confused if it's just a family, just a family's living there, whether they have an extra refrigerator or whatever, I guess in this situation, it may not matter if they're not even interested in doing that, but that's one way they could get around this issue.
That would be one way they could deal with that.
Go ahead, Mr. Merriman.
Not so much two kitchens, but if they've got two meters, two water meters, two electric meters, that's the thing.
Yeah, the building is set up as two individual living units.
They'd be fools to give that up or to convert it to, I mean,
maybe, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Condon, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I understand it, it's an extension of the non-conforming use that they've applied for.
Correct.
What about the fact that it extends into the setback?
So they haven't requested a variance for that.
If we approve this, they still have to come back to us for a variance for building into the setback, correct?
Or they'd have to, provide a scale drawing showing here's how we're not encroaching in that setback. We just, in looking at it,
survey, et cetera.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Is anything else from staff?
All right. Anything else from staff?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Is the petitioner online?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Hello? This is Jeffrey and Elaine.
Yes, Jeffrey and Elaine.
have you sworn in?
Yes.
Yes, we did swear in.
Okay. All right. Thank you. If you would go ahead and take about 10 minutes and tell, or however long you need, up to about 10 minutes, and tell us what you'd like to tell us.
Okay, we thought we were within the setbacks because we measured from the back of the existing house, not that porch on the back, but the brick part of the house to where there's a chain link fence between the lot and Washington Lane. And that was a 30 foot measurement, I believe.
And so, that's something that can be dealt with. Really today, the main thing that we're trying to deal with is the extension of the non-conforming use.
Right, but I'm saying you're basing the fact that it's closer to the lot line on this aerial photo, but we were basing our measurement on from the back of the house to the chain link fence that's there now, which we assumed was on the lot line.
I think that what staff's getting at is that, you know, there may be, if y'all are approved on this petition, there may be additional work you have to do, you know, to show the measurements and things like that. But, you know, you can get with staff later on that. Would that be generally a correct statement? Yeah, since staff is nodding, that's something that can be dealt with down the line.
Okay, and can you tell us on the basis of your measurements now, this 23'7" measurement that is apparently from the back of the house to the lot line?
Oh, no, man, it's basically, that was just a thing called SAGIS, which is a computer program they use. And so yeah, because no drawings or measurements were submitted, they just went and just checked it because they felt like this would be an issue. And so what we're saying is if you do get past this hurdle, which you have about the pre-existing non-conforming use, then all that can get dealt with.
Okay.
That makes sense. Staff is not saying that this measurement is absolutely correct right now. This is just something they provided to say, hey, by the way, the application was for this, but you know, if it's approved, this is going to be a setback issue. So we'll have to get an exact measurement.
Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you. So Lynn, you want to just kind of talk through what we're thinking about and why?
Yeah, I'll tell you why we're doing this. We Jeff and I have retired this year. We live north of New York City. Our daughter Elizabeth Jones went to SCAD, and she's been living at our house. We turned our garage into a apartment for her, but it's a single family house, so it doesn't have like a real kitchen. She has health issues, and we like this side by side living arrangement, and she's an adult, but we're going to continue to do this. And we plan to move to Savannah when we purchase this house. That was our intent, that this is our retirement home, and then we can go down there and continue this same different parts of our family in the same building arrangement. I don't think, you know, we want to convert do what you'd have to do to convert it to single family, because that just doesn't really make sense, I think, from an economic point of view. And we're 65, and I don't know, we might not live there forever. You know, at some point it might have to be sold. So we don't want to give up the fact that it's a duplex. And as we understand it, I know the house next to it is a duplex, and across the street that the duplexes, I mean, these houses were built in Ardsley Park originally, but since then zoning changed so that other buildings can't be converted from single family to multifamily. So that's why we're going through this expanding a non-conforming use. If we have to change our plans or go for a variance regarding the setback, then we could go forward in that regard.
Mm-hmm. But I think what we're trying to accomplish here is, I mean, Elaine and I are getting older. The building as currently configured has one bath with a tub. We would both like to have a second bath with a shower so that we don't have to stretch ourselves to get into and out. Our daughter would like a little bit of studio space since she went to SCAD. She does a lot of art type projects, and some of that she does for sale. And so what we were hoping to do is add a small bathroom in the back along with laundry area, which is currently on the porch, but to expand that a bit, and then perhaps have a porch to cover the rest of the back which my daughter would have, so she could work on projects in the summer, and then during the winter she would put down roll downs on shade so that she would get some winterization, but it wouldn't be a full winterization. So that's what we're kind of looking at doing. As Elaine said, we had no idea that we were potentially encroaching on the drawback requirement. We would not want to do that, I don't think, because we don't want to do something that's not in character with the neighborhood or with ordinance requirements. But these are the purposes of the changes that we're looking at doing. We're hoping that from the standpoint of extending the variance, you'd be willing to go along with that.
And I should add, since we presented you with documents about this addition, we've scaled back what we're doing. It has the same footprint, but the part that's habitable, that's the room inside the house. Like if you look at this part on the left behind the kitchen, that in our new plan, because with construction costs being so much higher, this is going to cost more than we thought. We were going to leave this room on the left as the only part that's like part of the house. I mean, well, part, you know, an inside heated, cooled part of the house. And then the part on the right that shows now is like a third room. Instead, we would have that be a screened porch on both levels, with the idea that we could have these roll down plastic shades so that if our daughter is working in there in the winter, you can have a space heater and, you know, have it warmed up somewhat. But so that the actual square footage to the house won't be, I think in the plan that we have now, it would be increased about 340 square feet, not the amount that we had originally, although the footprint is the same. So so we've scaled it back, and part of this addition is a porch.
Mm-hmm. But not for the footprint standpoint.
Yeah, the footprint is the same. Mm-hmm. But part of it is still exterior, you know, part of it will be exterior space.
Okay. Any questions for the petitioners? Mr. Brown.
Yes, maybe I'm a little confused, but maybe you can help clarify this for me. I'm looking at the first floor unit has two bedrooms and one bath, and it's listed for rent. I assume that it's vacant. And then the second, the main part of the house is 5,184 square feet, and has four bedrooms and two baths. So are you asking for another bathroom?
No, the main building is two floors, each as you described at first, but it's basically there's the main building is one, the upper floor is one unit that looks like what's on this diagram, the lower is another one. And they're both currently rented out, but they'll become vacant in December.
Yeah, November 30th, the tenants move out November 30th, and we're planning to move down there early in 2021.
Any other questions? Any other questions for the petitioners? Hearing none, is there anyone that would like to speak for or against this petition besides the petitioners? Please raise your hand electronically. All right, hearing none. Listen, I would like, if you guys would like to take a couple of minutes and wrap up, you're welcome to do that.
Jeff and Elaine, yes?
Yeah, yes, I'm sorry, Jeff and Elaine, I'm sorry, yes.
I'm trying to get used to this virtual stuff.
I am too.
I wanted to go back to adding this second bathroom with the shower. I've had a hip replaced and a knee replaced in the last 3 years, and our current house is up 13 steps from the street, and I'm kind of having a very, very difficult time here. And so we're looking forward to getting to Savannah, where things aren't as hilly and rocky as where we are, and we'll be on the first floor and having a shower I can get into instead of trying to deal with a bathtub will be very good for my body. So,
but on the other hand, I like taking baths from time to time, so giving up the bathtub would not be ideal either.
Well, there is a bathtub in the house in the existing house. It's just we want to get a stall shower in here. So, and the porch on the back of the house is very rickety now, and I think it probably should come down anyway. And the washer and dryer is out there, so you know, we'll have this be laundry area too. But anyway, those are our plans.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff and Elaine. Staff have anything else to add? Okay. And, you know, I think our, you know, can you just restate our charge? And I think we need to stay right here on this sheet, you know, with all of the different points.
Sure. So absolutely. You know, as stated here, this letter 5 per Article 3, Section 3.24.8, as it relates to the expansion of a nonconforming use, the Zoning Board of Appeals shall make a finding that the request either complies or does not comply with each individual criterion provided below. If there is noncompliance with at least one of the criteria below, the request shall not be approved. So I won't restate all of these, but I'll let you read through these and have any discussion you'd want to have.
Okay. All right. I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Brown?
I move that we accept the staff's recommendation for the reason.
Oh, I'm sorry. I move that we approve the staff's recommendation for the reason that it's already nonconforming, and by adding more square footage, it makes it more nonconforming. And the function of the property has already been established, so it's basically just an additional square footage.
Okay, that's motion. Can I get a second? Any seconds on the motion? Okay. We do not have a second on that motion.
Mr. Branch.
Yes, Mr. Merriman.
I'd like to ask staff something. Which one of these criteria or which ones of these criteria do they not meet?
So letter A here. So the proposed nonconforming use of the building is not detrimental to public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and the adjacent uses or general vicinity by reason of any one or more following. The number, area, location, height, orientation, intensity, or relation to the neighbor or other adjacent uses. So that was one of them that we said the encroachment into the rear setback is not in keeping with the orientation of other homes, and also the location of that addition being on the rear, encroaching upon that rear setback.
Now it says on that block, are we constricted to just consider houses on that block, and are there any other duplexes on that block?
So it is important to note there are other duplexes on the block. It is a pattern of development in that area. However, this one at hand is the expansion of a duplex compared to just an existing duplex. And it general vicinity, if we look at, I'll pull up the aerial map again. As far as the building footprints themselves, they're all pretty much in keeping as far as rear setbacks of the primary structure. Many of them do have accessory structures that encroach even further, but accessory structures have different setback lines than the principal dwelling units do. So that was the big differentiation between this property compared to the other properties on the block.
And you were recommending denial based on, can you go back to that sheet, please? Based on letter A right there, correct?
Yes, letter A. Also, it's important to note here that also letter C. So the general site standards of this ordinance relating to the original use are complied with to the extent possible. The general site standards for this zoning district are not being adhered to since the addition would encroach that rear setback.
Now, that's based upon what you say is that 23-foot measurement.
Correct.
And as my colleague pointed out to me, that he believes that that's being taken off of the roof line. Yeah, and then that one's really, I mean, y'all, that one's stretching it, because it's not a, as admitted by staff, it's not a, a survey grade measurement. It's just taken off of a website. I mean, it's not even a tape measure pulled to where somebody thinks the line is.
That's true. And if scale drawings were provided, we could, you know, potentially have a different recommendation.
I put that on the applicant. I mean, you know, but, you know, okay. I mean,
based off the information we had and the ordinance requirements, that's how we came to this recommendation.
Okay. And they're, but they're not even asking for, could you go back to the A? I mean, go back. Yeah. Well, I'd like to make a motion that we grant the variance that the applicant is asking for. Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Khan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Can you scroll this up? I want to see what, sorry, the other way. Sorry. The, so number five, per Article 3, Section 324.8. If we find that one of these as a board is not met, we must not approve?
That's correct, sir.
And I, go ahead, Mr. Khan.
So the question, I guess, then is, if we then go back to A, so I can work with Mr. Merriman here. The proposed nonconforming use is not detrimental to the public interest, health, weight, safety, so such and such. Your comment is the encroachment into the rear setback is not in keeping with the orientation of the other homes. So our charge today, if I understand it correctly, is to determine whether or not we feel as though the encroachment would not be within the keeping of the other homes on the block. Would that be a correct statement?
That's correct. It's also important to note letter D as well. So it wasn't just A, it was also D here too. So the staff had
the building
had pointed out two points where they were not in compliance.
I thought C and E also, right?
Yeah, C and
E.
So E we agree with that the building has not been redesigned yet. It's actually 3 points.
Yeah, A, C, and D, right?
Well, let me, before I make my motion, I'd like to explain to all of y'all. D, all right, the design of the building cannot readily accommodate a permitted use. A nonconforming building already cannot, it is not part of that.
Well, go ahead.
C, I mean, what is that? Yeah, C, the site standards of this ordinance relating to the original use are complied to the extent possible. I mean, the applicant is saying that them and staff have somebody should have taken some measurements. And you're right. I guess the applicant should have did that, but I'm not convinced that it doesn't. And A, I mean, so orientation would mean the way that the building is turned. Was it not? Does it not face the front facade of that building, face the primary street there? I mean, if you turned it side, I think what it's trying to, the ordinance is trying to say is that you couldn't take and put a building facing sideways on the lot. That's the orientation of the building, is it not?
Maybe, yeah.
Understanding that wrong. So I don't see.
I think the word orientation, I think, could just generally be speaking about the way that houses are sitting on other lots in the neighborhood. Right. No, I think. I don't know that it means.
This addition is not going to change the orientation of that building.
Well, it's not worried about the changing the orientation of that building. It's talking about the orientation of other homes on the block, and it's staying within that fashion. And let me, I just want to add something real quick. Are we done, Mr. Merriman?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I just have one. Let's just not forget about the purpose behind the ordinance, and the purpose behind the provision that we're dealing with here, that, you know, you give somebody the use of a nonconforming use if it's, you know, they didn't create it and they can continue in it. But the goal is to eventually have these things not being nonconforming uses if changes are made. And so that's where, you know, let's just remember that the purpose of this section of the ordinance is to encourage people that are going to invest in properties and work on properties. One of the purposes is to get rid of non-conforming uses in the neighborhood. So I don't want us to lose sight of that fact. All right, thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Brown?
Turn your microphone on, Michael.
There's no indication that they want to convert the non-conforming use into a single family, even if there's nothing in writing, there's nothing in their applications, but there's nothing to preclude them from selling this property to somebody else.
They don't even own it.
They don't own it.
They're going to buy it.
Well,
they bought it in 2018.
Well, I thought she just made a statement.
They're not living there yet.
No, we're not living there yet. We've owned it since January 2018.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
We bought it foreseeing our eventual retirement, which has taken.
Mr. Brown, go ahead.
But I think that's a big leap of assumption is that the present current owner that doesn't live there now, lives in another state, is not going to sell it or use it or eventually sell it to somebody else that wants to use it as a two-unit building. I think it's a leap of faith to think that they're going to automatically convert it to a single-family
house. Well, they said they're not going to do that. I mean, they don't plan on it.
So it's basically non-conforming with an additional non-conforming.
That's basically what they're asking. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions for staff or for the petitioners? All right, hearing none, I'm going to declare this public hearing closed.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
Right, we have a motion, Mr. Merriman.
That we grant the variance that the applicant is requesting based on the fact that I don't believe that any of these criteria have been met.
That's a motion by Mr. Merriman. So basically, Mr. Merriman's motion is that where the staff found a difference on these, which was A, C, and D.
I could word it a little better.
Yeah, no, you're fine. He's saying that he finds counter to staff on that. All right. Can I get a second? I mean, that is correct, Mr. Merriman. Right?
Correct.
Can I get a second? Mr. Condon?
I second.
Mr. Condon seconded. So what we have is a vote that would permit the applicant to extend the nonconforming use. I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Okay. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
No.
Was that a no?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Condon? Yes. Okay. That's a yes. Mr. Merriman?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
No.
Mr. Griffith?
No.
And I'm a no. So the vote is 4-2. That motion fails. So can I now seek a motion? I mean, I would like us to have a final approved decision here, Mr. Brown.
Okay. I'd like to move again that we accept the staff's recommendation for the extension of the non-conforming use for more non-extension, the first more non-conforming use.
Okay. Can I get a second?
Second.
Mr. Griffin seconded. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Condon. Is a no. Mr. Merriman?
No.
Is a no. Mr. Brown? Is a yes. Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. And so the vote is 4-2 in favor of staff recommendation. And so it's been denied. Thank you very much. All right. Next petition is 715 East Park Avenue, appeal of a decision of the zoning administrator. We're going to take 1 minute while Mr. Lotson's setting up. Mr. Lotson, may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The item before you at this time is an appeal to a decision by the zoning administrator of the city of Savannah. This appeal is related to property at 715 East Park Avenue, which is shown on the map here. The petitioner, which is an adjacent property owner, and a number of other members officially on this petition from other property owners within the neighborhood are appealing that decision made by the zoning administrator related to a zoning confirmation letter and building permit that was issued for an accessory structure at 715 East Park Avenue. The grounds for the appeal are outlined by the petitioner in Exhibit 1, which we'll go through here today, this morning. Their grounds include alleged errors in the review process relative to the architectural design requirements, site review, upholding the purpose of the ordinance, and misinterpretation of certain ordinance sections, as what has been alleged by the applicant. There's a zoning confirmation letter attached to the agenda, which I'm going to show you. That was provided by the City of Savannah regarding this, regarding the property at 715 East Park Avenue. The original request for the zoning confirmation letter stated, and I quote, requesting confirmation of the factors determining similar architectural style as they relate to accessory dwelling units in section 8.7.4E of NUZO. Additionally, confirm how these factors are determined, i.e. through committee by agent of the city, et cetera. So that was the question that was asked of the zoning administrator to respond to, and they responded with this letter that you see before you. Regarding architectural style, this is a section of the zoning ordinance that relates to accessory dwellings, accessory structures, and a portion of that states that as it relates to architectural style, such use shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal building if the site is located within an overlay district and standards of the overlay district apply. Essentially, what that means is that during the permit process, the Office of the Zoning Administrator has to make a determination as to whether that, among the other criteria, has been met prior to issuing a permit. Now, relative to the appeal procedure today, the way this applies to this body is that according to section 3.23.1 applicability, when it is alleged that there is an error in a final written decision of an administrator, commission, or board authorized to make a final written decision with regards to the provision of this ordinance, an appeal by any aggrieved party may be taken to the Zoning Board of Appeals except as otherwise provided in this ordinance. So the applicant has filed their appeal based on that section that they believe errors have been made. I'm going to go into the petitioner's stated grounds on their application as to what they are appealing. The appellant has stated the following, and I'll go through these individually. The appellant grounds includes that staff did not perform an architectural review until construction of the project was underway. In our review of the circumstances, and they're referring to the city staff in terms of issuing the permit, but in MPC staff's review of the circumstances, we found that yes, the staff is required to determine compatibility, but there is no outside of that determination, there's no architectural review per se. The appellant also files an appeal on the grounds that staff did not perform the proper development review prior to issuing a permit. We found that staff did indeed perform a development review. It appears that the appellant disagrees with the outcome of that review. The appeal further goes on to state that staff did not uphold the regulations of section 1.1.4 of the zoning ordinance. That section is the purpose of the ordinance, and that goes into in some detail the purpose of the entire ordinance. We don't believe that that's a regulation per se that is enforceable by the Office of the Zoning Administrator. And I will go into just regarding that piece, a little bit of the language of that section. In section 1.1.4, purpose of this ordinance, which is in Article 1 of the zoning ordinance, states that this ordinance is adopted for the purpose of promoting the public health, safety, and general welfare of the residents and property owners of and visitors to the City of Savannah, and to encourage the orderly, harmonious, and judicious use of land consistent with the goals, policies, and strategies of the Chatham County Savannah Comprehensive Plan. More specifically, this ordinance is adopted to accomplish the following purposes, and it goes into the details of those purposes, which include providing standards for the orderly development of the city, to protect and conserve property values, to provide for adequate light, air, and privacy, some fairly broad terms that are typical in the zoning ordinance, to secure safety, to encourage appropriate land use of lands and buildings, to promote economic stability, and so on. So as it relates to this as a grounds for appeal, we didn't believe that that section of the ordinance is a regulatory piece as much as it is a description of what the intent of the ordinance is. The appellant also filed on the grounds that staff did not adhere to the requirement that accessory buildings be clearly incidental and subordinate. The ordinance states that an accessory dwelling shall be accessory and clearly incidental and subordinate to the permitted principal use. Incidental and subordinate is not a specific only in our opinion to the size of the structure, which we believe is the appellant's position. The appellant also appealed on the grounds that staff misinterpreted the ordinance regarding the height of accessory buildings. The ordinance states that the height of an accessory building shall not exceed the height of the principal building in a residential district or where otherwise prohibited by this ordinance. The subject property is zoned TR3, which is traditional residential. The TR districts accommodate primarily residential neighborhoods with limited non-residential uses. The maximum permitted height in the TR3 is 36 feet, and the principal building is less than 36 feet and less than the accessory building. The appellant's grounds also include that staff misinterpreted the ordinance specific to the TR3 zoning district and permitted building types. The appellant contends that an ADU, accessory dwelling unit, built above a garage is not a permitted building type in the district. Staff found that there is no prohibition of that particular building type. The appellant also files on the grounds that staff misinterpreted zoning language regarding height. The appellant appears to be referencing a previously proposed zoning amendment that has not been adopted by the mayor and aldermen, so that, and I'm sure they'll go into that piece of this, but that is an amendment that had been submitted by staff at one point, but has not gone through a full review and has not been adopted by council. Lastly, the appellant's grounds state that staff failed to consider the significance of the National Register of Historic Places designation of the Eastside neighborhood. The Eastside neighborhood is designated within the National Register of Historic Places, which is a federal designation that local governments have no authority over. And there are no design standards or other standards locally that impact that. As stated in section 3.23.6, the appellant shall have the burden of proof regarding the preceding allegations. In the city of Savannah, the zoning administrator is empowered in making determinations and interpretations in all aspects of the ordinance. Under appeal, the zoning board may reverse or affirm or may modify the final written decision appealed and shall make a final written decision that in its opinion ought to be made in the case before it, unless otherwise specified. And MPC staff's review of the criteria as it relates to the decision that was made, we find that the decision was made within the constraints of the powers of the office of the zoning administrator, and that the appeal should be denied. I did want to show you two photographs here. One that was filed with the original application that shows a photo of the principal residence at this at the property at 715 East Park Avenue, and to the rear of it, the accessory building. This building has been redesigned and some reconstruction has taken place since this photograph has been taken. The roof line was changed from the roof line that you see there to a more traditional roof line. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. staff, Mr. Marion. How else happened, Mr. Marion?
Oh, Marcus, the maximum allowed height is 36 feet, and the what y'all have found is this exceeds the 36 feet, and correct?
It does not exceed 36 feet, but it does exceed the height of the principal building.
But it's higher than the principal building.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
So it would, apparently they must have gotten a building permit. The plan, how'd the plans get approved and everything, and them get this far in construction before they found out they couldn't build it that tall? I mean,
as it relates to the building permit process and the architectural review, as I understand it, within the city of Savannah, those are really two separate paths. So I think that may have been where some of the review diverged, in that the this architectural standard related to height is a part of the accessory dwelling permit review through zoning. The building permit is issued through a separate department within the city of Savannah.
Okay, and this is Park Avenue, so this is not, this is not in the Landmark District. So this is in what, the streetcar district?
No, this is in the East Side neighborhood. Okay, East Side neighborhood. And the East Side neighborhood has been designated federally as a part of the National Register of Historic Places. That, however, is not a local designation, where in some of the districts that you just named, there are local regulations that apply to those districts. That's not the case within this neighborhood.
So the architectural review is done just by MPC staff, or is, do they
by
have a
city of Savannah staff?
City of Savannah staff.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I guess they did not have an issue with the height
Correct.
In the beginning. And when was it determined there was an issue with height then?
Well, I don't think that any issue related to this came about until the applicant filed or made the city aware that they were going to be filing an appeal regarding that decision.
Yeah, I don't think the city is saying that there's a problem with the height, right? Yeah. That's, it's just it's just the person appealing, or the group of people appealing.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all I've got.
Okay, any other questions for staff? Mr. Brown?
Just to clarify, so there was a building permit issued before it was, before construction started, and was reviewed by the zoning board, correct?
Yeah, the city of Savannah did issue a building permit for this structure.
And does it comply with the building permit? Does it meet the, does it, are the building permit that was issued, does this building comply with what's on the building permit?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for staff? Any other questions for staff by the board? All right, is anyone online has any questions, or?
The petitioner is online.
Petitioner is present, okay.
Yes, sir.
At this time, I'm gonna ask for the petitioner. Now, I wanna make sure, I don't know if all the, do we have multiple petitioners gonna speak?
Yes, no? Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna ask that we keep the total time for those that are appealing this, you know, to 10 minutes. And so I'm gonna ask staff to get a clock started here when I get done, and just try to make sure, you know, not to have things that are cumulative. If somebody's already said something, there's no reason to repeat it. All right, so the first person to speak, who is it?
My name is Alexia Robinson.
Ms. Robinson?
Yes.
Now, where do you reside?
Mr. Chairman, before we begin.
One second.
I would just ask that others who are waiting, please mute your microphones while Ms. Robinson is speaking. Thank you.
All right, okay. Ms. Robinson, where do you reside?
Okay, I've actually prepared a statement. I live at 754 East Duffy Street. I have been a homeowner here with my husband since 2007. We are directly
how close are you to this house?
We are directly behind the house. I'm looking at the house right now, and it is about 3 feet away from the alleyway. And we look at, it looms over us in our backyard when we walk out into our backyard. For the past 13.
So you're directly behind this. You can sit in your house and see the structure.
Absolutely. And okay. For the past 13 years, we've paid taxes without fail on our property here. During my time here, I have worked for the City of Savannah's Public Works Department and, ironically, as an analyst for Martin Freddy in the housing department. This structure, the reason why this is ironic is because the structure is an example of disruptive and inconsistent city and neighborhood planning. This is a business venture. It's not a neighborly one. I would like to know, you know, what you would think about a two-story structure looming over you while you tended your garden and tried to enjoy your personal sanctuary, how your sense of tranquility would change as the alleyway in your backyard gets turned into a street. These are worries and frustrations that myself and my neighbors did not think we would have to be burdened with, because in January of 2019, a variance request to build this ADU had been denied by the ZBA, and rightly so. My neighbor Brandon Moody authored the letter of opposition for that meeting, and staff and the majority of the board members alike found it to be contrary to the purposes and intent of the ordinance. There was a question over whether or not this would be a hardship for the community, and I can tell you that for myself, my husband, and the four other homeowners who petitioned for this appeal, and recently, as we found out from the Eastside Concerned Citizens leadership, that question has been answered. It is a hardship. After months of correspondence with the city's planning and urban design department beginning on January 24th, 2020, my neighbors and I were consistently told that because our neighborhood wasn't in a historic overlay district, that according to the new zoning standards, that there was nothing that could be done about a two-story salt box style home that was being built in front of back of a historic bungalow style home in our neighborhood. But as it turned out, even by the new zoning standards, this structure was in violation of code, enough so that a stop work order was placed on the project. Why? Because the city manager himself had seen pictures of the primary and secondary residence, and the city manager, I say, and I quote from a July 17th email, I had to pay for an open records request to receive this information, from a July 17th email, Alderwoman Gibson Carter, please note that staff has issued a stop work order for the construction of 715 East Park Avenue. Once I saw the photos you sent, the difference in architectural style became obvious, blatantly obvious. I am reviewing how a permit was issued and will let you know the findings. The code violation, whether it is from the new ZO or the old ZO, is still 874 Part E, which states architectural style. Such use shall be designed in similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. The requirement is still not met. Changing the pitch of the roof after a stop work order has been issued doesn't conform the structure into a bungalow. The architecture is still incongruent, and as any person could blatantly see if showed a picture of each home. Cozy local spot, easy walk to Forsyth Park, was how 715 Park Avenue was marketed on Airbnb. I wonder how the ADU behind it will be advertised. Two-story long-term vacation rental with views of the neighbor's backyards. What a voyeuristic experience. In conclusion, I implore you as a resident, a homeowner, and a neighbor to please ask that this ADU be at least, at the very least, converted into a one-story. I have taken off work to be here. My husband and I have spent countless hours in correspondence with various city officials. We have paid over $100 so far to file appeals and receive open records. We have done everything short of approaching the media about this situation. We have worried with our neighbors over whether or not the trucks in front of the structure will block our garbage pickup. I've already had to call the city over this because when I politely asked the roofer, he would not move their truck on our garbage day. I don't believe that we should be shouldered with the burden of witnessing this structure become what has undeniably been a nuisance and a violation of privacy. As the past 9 months have proven, it already is. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Is any other petitioners or appellants wishing to speak?
Right. Hello.
This is Michael
Siebenhaller. Hard one. Yeah, I'm Alexi's husband, and I just wanted to speak a little bit on one of the purposes of the ordinance, which was to protect the property values and property rights. It's pretty clear to me, well, I don't know whether it'll show up on Zillow that it affects our property value, but if, you know, someday when we go to sell this house, what I mean, I think any person would agree that if you had a choice between two homes that you're looking at in a neighborhood, you're going to choose the other one that doesn't have a two-story building overlooking your backyard. And it's clearly an apartment with an attached garage, so there's going to be traffic in the lane. It's not appealing and will affect our property values, in my opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Any questions for Michael from the board? All right. Anybody else wishing to speak any other petitioners wishing to speak for this matter? Appellants? Heather Mays, I'm sorry. Heather Mays, yep. Ms. Mays? Hello, Ms. Mays. Are you there? All right, Ms. Mays, I'm having trouble getting
you. Hello, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Is this Ms. Mays?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mays. Before you begin, I want to ask you, where do you reside?
I live right next to Mike and Ann. So I also live with Brandon Moody directly behind also the subject property at 715 East Park Avenue.
Okay.
And I thank you very much for taking the time to hear this issue. We have resided in the East Side neighborhood almost for our entirety of our time in Savannah. So almost about 10 years that we've lived in the East Side. We've lived in our residence on Duffy Street that's directly behind this house since 2014. And we actually own two other homes in the East Side neighborhood that we've renovated ourselves, always with the intention of keeping in character with the neighborhood. The issue of the permit, which we believe is invalid, does not preclude the city of discharging its statutory duties to enforce zoning and correct mistakes. The permit did not confer rights in contravention of zoning laws. The permit was invalid from the start and continues to be legally void ab initio. The stop work order that Ann referenced, which was issued in July to change the style and shape of the roofline, is evidence of the error and failure to perform a proper permitting review. The plan review process was not performed, and just in going back to the comments made on the MPC staff review here, so under where it says staff is required to determine compatibility, outside of that determination, there is no architectural review. That statement in itself to me seems like an oxymoron because it seems that you cannot determine compatibility without having a proper architectural review. We're appealing that the purpose of the ordinance has not been met. In my opinion, if the zoning administrator is not to uphold the purpose of the ordinance, I'm not entirely sure what their position, what their job is to do, if they are not to uphold the purpose of the ordinance, which, as Marcus stated, and which is in our appeal, there's many different statements under that purpose, some of which we highlighted in our appeal, some of them including maintaining the integrity and individual character of established neighborhoods and promote desired character in new developments, protect and enhance the aesthetics and character of all parts of the city, conserve and protect the historical integrity and character of the neighborhood, regulate the height and bulk of buildings, protect existing residential neighborhoods by preventing the encroachment of incompatible land uses, protect against blight, preserving property values, and promoting desirable living conditions and residential stability. It's obvious in our opinion that to be accessory and clearly incidental and subordinate to the permitted principal use, this structure would not have been issued a stop work order if it were compatible and matching the primary residence. I think that within itself is an admittance of the failure of this permit from the beginning. And I would remind you all, as Ann mentioned, that the homeowner did come before you all in January of 2019 requesting a variance for this ADU, which was denied. And just to state, because we actually listened to the minutes from that meeting, just to state some of your own from the ZBA staff, some of your own comments that were stated in that meeting. One member of staff said it sits within a historic neighborhood. No precedent for ADUs in this neighborhood. There is no precedent for ADUs in this neighborhood. So in other words, a survey was conducted at the time and they found that there was very little precedent, maybe like two ADUs in the entire neighborhood. Someone else stated there's a sharp distinction between garages and accessory dwelling units, which again, this is a dwelling, a residential unit on top of a garage, which back to the MPC staff review, where you all have stated that the ADU above a garage is, as we mentioned, it's not a permitted building type in the TR3 zoning district. And you all have stated here in the staff review that there is no prohibition of this building type. That's actually inaccurate. If you go to the zoning itself, you can pull up under principal use table in section 5.4. There's the principal use table within the zoning, and upper story residential does not have a checkbox saying that it is a permitted use in the TR3 zoning district. So I'm finding some errors myself just in the MPC staff rebuttals to our appeal. Okay. I'm going to give the mic over if that's okay.
I just wanted to say that we've hit our 10 minutes. If we could just try to wrap it up in a minute or so.
Sure. I'm going to turn I pretty much think I've said all I can. I'm going to turn it over to Teresa Reynolds, who is a representative from the Eastside Concerned Citizens.
Okay. I had a Brandon Moody on here to speak. Is he still here?
He asked about Brandon.
Is Brandon Moody wanting to speak?
I'm not sure. I know he may have tried to log in. I'm not sure if he's able to or not.
All right. And who else do we have wanting to speak?
This is Teresa Reynolds. She is the representative for the Eastside Concerned Citizen Neighborhood Organization.
Okay. Teresa, go ahead.
Yeah. My opinion on this, and I'm one of these block captains that walks the neighborhood that include Kyla Brown, the historical district, the Victoria district, and there, and my survey during my walking, there is no structure and no one backyard that I could give you an address of. So this to me is in violation of everything that we're talking about here today. Why is it a garage, an apartment, where it wasn't supposed to be and it was approved, but it was currently, and it still shows that you all made errors when y'all approved this. And now we backsliding trying to clear this up because the work is still in progress, although it had a stop issue on it. And that's all I have to say at this moment.
All right, thank you, Ms. Reynolds. Anyone else? Do we have any other speakers online?
I'd like to just make one more comment.
Is this Ms. Mays?
It is, yes.
Hold on 1 second, Ms. Mays. It's just really hard because we don't see everybody. I need to kind of control the meeting, so hold on 1 second. Anybody else wishing to speak electronically? Okay. All right, Ms. Mays, I'll let you have a – I'm sorry, 1 second. Okay. We've already asked about him. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Mays, if you could try to wrap it up in a minute or so.
Thank you. I would just like to conclude with, if allowed by the zoning board, this would set a precedent for other non-conforming development in our neighborhood. And I believe that the board today has an opportunity to do the right thing for our neighborhood by correctly interpreting the intent of the zoning and not allowing this two-story structure, with which clearly exceeds the height of the primary residence, which there is no precedent for that elsewhere in the zoning in any other historic neighborhood, which do have restrictions and guidance with their overlay districts. No reasonable person could look at this property and accessory structure and say that it is clearly insubordinate to the principal structure or in keeping with character of the neighborhood. And also, I would just like to state that actually on today's city council agenda, they're actually planning to do a second hearing of a second reading of the new ordinance language, which is being passed through, which because of this exact situation, actually, this is because of our situation, this new language is going to be put into the zoning, which states things such as the height of the principal dwelling shall not be exceeded by any accessory building, as well as a putting in a homeowner occupancy provision, which would require the homeowner to live in the main dwelling, and that would help prevent issues such as we already stated, it's a fact that the homeowner has been Airbnb-ing this property prior to his building of the ADU, which we're certain he'll also put on Airbnb.
Okay, thank you. Is anyone else, let me ask this, any of the board members have any questions for any of the petitioners? Okay, having none, does the staff need to say something? Go ahead, Mr. Lotson.
If we don't have any other speakers at this time, I just wanted to make a couple of points.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I don't think we've got anybody right now, but I just wanted to circle back on a couple of points that were made during the discussion. Most recently, there was a comment made about an item that's on the city council agenda today, and I just want to share with the board that I don't think that something that has not and may not be adopted by the council should be under consideration as it relates to your position on any of these matters. I think another thing that came up regarding this building type, this garage with an apartment or a unit above issue, the reason that Ms. Mays and others may not have seen that when they looked at the principal use table, because that would not be considered a principal use. It's an accessory use, so it would not be found in the principal use table in terms of permitted building types within a zoning classification. Outside of that, I just wanted to remind the board that today's action, should one be taken, is really about the appeal regarding this item, not permitting or not permitting an accessory dwelling unit on a piece of property. It is true also that this item came before this body back in January of 2019. That was under different regulations at the time, and a finding was made at that time based on the available information that the board had then. We're dealing with a different set of circumstances now, both in what your charge is today, as well as the regulations that we're operating under. So I just wanted to make those points, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lotson. Any questions for staff? Mr. Brown, any other questions after Mr. Brown? No?
Okay. Real quick, Margaret, I'm just, because I'm confused. How many living units can be used per lot on TR3?
Can you repeat that?
How many units can there be in TR3?
Well, it depends on the lot size, but you can have a principal use as well as an accessory use.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? All right. Is there anyone else online or... they're not in person.
Yes, we do have some other members. I think.
Have other members of the public wishing to speak? 1 second, I'll recognize you. I'm assuming we're waiting for the owners of the property with the accessory structure.
No, we got the Miller City staff, I think, that's teamed up now.
Okay, is the owner of the property that are building the structure on and going to speak?
I don't think we don't know that they're on the call, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, but they don't have to be there.
Correct. Yeah.
Who is it? The city staff?
Bridget Liddy.
Miss Liddy, and Miss Liddy, are you there? I think you may be muted, Miss Liddy. Bridget Liddy.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bridget Lee. I'm Director of Planning and Urban Design for the City of Savannah. I also serve as the zoning administrator for the city in administering the zoning ordinance and zoning map for the City of Savannah. So I just wanted to go through the points that were brought up in the appeal to clarify and back up some of the comments that Marcus had outlined in reference to their analysis of the situation. First and foremost, on January 28th of this year, the city did issue a building permit for the property owner of the subject property to construct an accessory dwelling unit in accordance with Section 874 of the zoning code. During the review, all aspects of the zoning ordinance were under consideration and were looked at and examined. The one piece that was overlooked was 874E, which had to do with the architectural style. When we were made aware of this, we immediately issued a stop work order on July 17th. With the stop work order, we were able to work with the property owner to modify specific items of the style of the property in order to have it be in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling as outlined in the zoning code. Moving on to the second point brought up in the appeal in reference to not following the proper development review process. We actually did follow the appropriate review process, and based on the way this particular portion of the code is written, an accessory dwelling unit is considered an accessory to a one-family dwelling on an individual lot for the subject property. And a building permit would be submitted as outlined in 382B of the code. Throughout the process, our staff had been working with the property owner, not only with this particular permit that was issued, but also the Zoning Board of Appeals application that was submitted to you all and reviewed previously. During our review, when the stop work order was issued, changes were made to the property and the structure to meet the requirements. The height was looked at, materials were looked at, color was looked at to ensure that the development was compatible with adjacent or surrounding developments in terms of building orientation, scale, and exterior construction materials. And so that permit was issued on August 25th based on the revisions that were made by the property owner. Moving forward to item number three, which I think has been touched on a bit in reference to the purpose of the zoning ordinance. This particular provision sets forth the general purpose of the entire zoning code. All specific criteria and applicable code sections for this particular review were considered and deemed to have been met, resulting in the issuing of the permit as it was revised. In reference to number four, that staff did not adhere to the requirement that an accessory building be clearly incidental and subordinate. Going back to the points that Marcus had brought up, in addition to that, within 8.7, there is a specific section in the ordinance dealing with accessory structures and uses. 8.7.3 deals with accessory structures, and a separate section, 8.7.4, deals with accessory dwelling units. Because there are two different types of provisions in the code for these two different types of uses, we followed the correct one for 874. In addition to that, the principal use is a single family residential structure, which is permitted as a use within the TR3 district. The accessory dwelling unit is incidental and subordinate to that principal dwelling unit. based on the building permit revisions that were submitted and approved by the city, the accessory dwelling unit will require potential, will reduce, excuse me, potential adverse impacts on the surrounding properties and will be in keeping with the character of the principal structure. In addition to that, for number five, where it is alleged that we misinterpreted the ordinance regarding the height of the accessory building, please note within the zoning code under the section 874 dealing with accessory dwelling units, there is no provision that differentiates between the height, what the height should be for a principal dwelling unit versus the accessory dwelling unit. However, when you look at section 873 accessory structure, which is a different type of use, there is a requirement that says that the accessory structure cannot be taller than the accessory, than the principal dwelling unit. And keeping in mind, there's a separate definition for accessory structure, a separate definition for accessory dwelling units, and a separate definition for accessory uses. And, you know, evidenced as in the ordinance by the whole two separate sections with the definitions required pieces that we consider, these regulations and their development standards are very specific to what is involved with the accessory dwelling unit. And like I said, there is no height restriction provided for in 874 accessory dwelling units. Moving on to number six, where we misinterpreted the specifics to the TR3 zoning district. Within the context of Article 5, accessory structures are permitted. There is a specific item within the development standards that allows for accessory structures and uses. In addition to that, within Article 5, under the TR3 zoning district, development standards for permitted uses provides for standards for the accessory structures setbacks in 8.7. In addition to that, there's a question about the upper story residential. There is a definition in the code that states specifically that upper story residential is defined as one or more residential dwelling units located on the floor above a ground floor non-residential use. An upper story residential use may have access from the first floor non-residential use. And just to clarify, the garage is considered an accessory use supporting the accessory dwelling unit. And I think it's important to recognize that the subject building is defined as an accessory dwelling unit because it includes an individual residential unit. The accessory structure definition does not apply in this particular case. Within that portion of the appeal, there was also a question about the interpretation of the 40% of the floor area of the accessory dwelling unit. And we just wanted to make sure that the board realized and recognized that the square footage of the building footprint is for the building footprint. It's not the gross floor of the structure. Therefore, we're not in violation of that particular section of the code. The seventh item on there has to deal with the ordinance proposal that is before mayor and council. That is currently under consideration by them. Many of you all are aware the new zoning ordinance went into effect last year. This is one of the first accessory dwelling units that has gone through where we have had challenges and concerns raised from the residents. And our response was to look at the code and try to make some revisions in order to hear what they were saying and potentially have mayor and council ultimately make the decision on which direction they would like to go. And like I said, that is currently being considered today. And the final item on the list that they are appealing is that we failed to consider the significance of the National Register of Historic Place designation for the East Side neighborhood. And I will say that the neighborhood was officially given a designation for the National Register of Historic Places, which is a federal designation, in order to have additional architectural review to occur for this particular type of property in this location. There would need to be some type of historic district overlay that was created and there are this particular area, we do not have an overlay. So there is no additional architectural review standard that kicks in. It would just be a review that occurs within the general building permit process. And that concludes my comments right now.
Thank you, Ms. Liddy. Is anyone else here? Any questions for Ms. Liddy? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, questions, please.
Questions. Mr. Brown?
Bridget, I've got a question for you that doesn't refer to the rear, but the neighbors seem to refer to the fact that this is a short-term vacation rental. And I'm assuming in order for them to use that they had to get a certificate for short-term vacation rental, which is a commercial certificate, which collects sales tax, which does not apply. TR3 doesn't allow commercial use. Is that correct?
The TR3 district, this particular location does not permit a short-term vacation rental as a use. It's my understanding that there was a complaint that came in that the property owner was actually advertising this property on one of the short-term vacation rental platforms. That was investigated by our code compliance department and resulted in no violations being issued because no infractions were found. I will say that we are not aware of it currently being used for a short-term vacation rental because it's currently under construction, but it will be monitored to ensure that it will not be used as a short-term vacation rental because that would be a violation of the code.
Was there a short-term vacation rental certificate issued?
There was no short-term vacation rental certificate issued.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Liddy? Okay. We also have Jennifer Herman, the Deputy City Attorney, on the phone. She had sent a memo to the board prior to this, and we've talked about it. But Ms. Herman, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. It's good to hear from you again. It's been a while.
Same. Just for edification of everyone on the line, I'm the Deputy City Attorney out of the City Attorney's Office. One of our charges under the city code is to provide counsel to all of our boards and commissions, the ZBA being one of them. And that's the position I'm in at this point to speak. As outlined, one of the concerns I have is just protecting the record here. It's clear that the appellants are passionate about their position. And I think what we need to do to be careful here is to ensure that each one of them has standing to pursue this claim. And that's what I outlined in my memo. So if you want me to get into that, I know it sounds like you talked about it. I just want to make sure, because if this case is litigated in the Superior Court, it is limited to the current record. So whatever is held in this hearing, no new evidence will be allowed to be presented. So I just want to make sure that everything's on the table now.
Yeah. And, you know, we've gotten some information there from some of the appellants, you know, as to their proximity to the property. And I would say, as to the appellants who are on the line, you know, what the city attorney's office here is saying is, you know, you need to state your case now. And if you have any reason as to why you believe this shouldn't happen, you need to bring it up now. You at least mention it. So, you know, if you have any allegation that this structure is going to cause any financial hardship to your property, or, you know, that kind of information would be helpful. If you have anything to submit in writing or any reports, those are the kind of things she's asking for here.
Chairman Branch,
Hello?
Yep.
This is Alexia Robinson, 754 East Duffy Street.
And Ms. Robinson, you've already told us you can actually see the structure from right outside of your house, right?
It is 3 feet away from the alley, sir. It is 3 feet away from our alley. It is looming over our home. The thing that I wanted to reiterate is whether or not this is the new zoning or the old zoning or a revision of the new zoning, the requirement is still not met because, and I will refer to 874E, which states architectural style, such use shall be designed in similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. The principal dwelling is a bungalow. What pitched roof or not, That is not a bungalow that they're building back there. And what we're asking is that this be a one-story building. We're not asking that nobody be able to, you know, build ADUs. I own a small business. I understand that perspective. But what we're asking for is for our privacy back and for our and as far as, you know, values of homes are concerned, my husband did address that already.
Yes, he did. He made a statement that he believed that it would negatively impact the value of the home.
That's right.
Yep. And any I'm going to ask that we, anybody else wishing to speak, if you've already spoken, please keep it limited to this issue, you know, that's anything new or particularly as to this standing issue. You know, if you have any additional facts you'd like to assert as far as, you know, how you think this is negatively impacting you or impacting you differently than, say, everybody else, say, down the street, you know, because of your unique proximity to this location. All right. Who would be next to raise your hand? Ms. Mays, are you there?
Hi. Yes, thank you. Well, of course, both of our properties are directly affected by this ADU. However, my belief would be that, again, this would set a precedent in our neighborhood that then anyone wishing to go forward could use as an example of why they should be allowed to build such a structure which exceeds the primary residence. And again, we really wouldn't be here at all today if this was just a one-story structure. If this was just a garage built behind the primary residence, we wouldn't be here today. The fact that the ADU exceeds the height of the primary building is the main point of our argument. There's nowhere else in the zoning that such construction would be allowed. And the ADU review process requires, my understanding is that it requires all drawings of all of the buildings that are on the parcel. And we don't see any way where in the review drawings that there were any representations of the primary building. So it seems as though that was not actually taken into consideration. And the argument about the 40% square footage, it does that. In fact, if you're to tally the upstairs and the downstairs in total, that would be 800 square feet, which is over 40% of the habitable square footage of the primary structure. So we'd put it more at like 570 something, I believe. I don't have the exact math in front of me.
They're just looking at the footprint, Ms. Mays, on that.
And to me, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
We're getting off track here, Ms. Mays. Try to keep it. I want to try to keep it just to new issues and try not to get off track.
Well, I mean, the garage should count for something. You know, it's obvious that both the garage and the apartment itself are a part of the structure. And, you know, it's just really sad that, you know, within the zoning, actually, it states that there can be guidance given to recognize local or national historic designations. And they really just apparently chose not to recognize that at all.
Well, Ms. Liddy was talking about is while the neighborhood may have a designation, it does not have an overlay district like, say, the historic Savannah, you know, overlay or,
sure,
you know, other. So, you know, Arsley Park recently has gotten somewhat of an overlay when it has to do with demolition of buildings.
And actually, our neighborhood is older than Arsley Park. Our neighborhood was started in 1890 and until 1950.
Mays, hold on. What I'm saying is this thing is not in a historic district. Okay. So what I would suggest is if, you know, it does not get the heightened architectural review, which you have been used to, you read articles about things that are going on in the historic district, things like that. So a lot of what y'all are saying is a good points. I get it, but it's not applicable here. Now, I'm not saying everything you're saying, but there's some things y'all are talking about. It's just not applicable here. I'm going to go ahead right now, and I want to just get Ms. Liddy to try to talk about the height issue again. Ms. Liddy, are you here?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Branch. Just to be clear, within the section 8.7, accessory structures and uses, under section 8.7.3, accessory structures, it specifically states that accessory structures, not to include accessory dwelling units, are allowed in zoning districts. They are subject, the requirements for accessory dwelling units, which is what the structure is that you're looking at right now, does not have a requirement for a height limitation. Yet the accessory structure section does have a height requirement that states that it cannot be taller than the principal dwelling. So for this particular situation, because we do not have language in the section 874 accessory dwelling units, which regulates this type of use, there is no height limitation other than what is in the TR3 zoning district as articulated in Article 5.
Thank you, Ms. Liddy. That helps a lot. Now, Ms. Mays, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I just wanted to get Ms. Liddy to give us some clarity because, you know, I mean, the height issue is a very important issue. Did you have
Correct.
Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, the ADU, I would say, you know, it is an accessory structure, is it not?
We need to get past that. So my understanding is that this is an accessory dwelling unit, not an accessory structure. And there's two different definitions.
An accessory dwelling unit actually does not include a garage in the definition of it.
The garage, this is Bridget. I'm just going to jump in and say that the garage is considered an accessory structure to the accessory dwelling unit in this particular situation. And we have examples throughout the city where we have garage apartments as accessory dwelling units.
So, I mean, the difference is, you know, a garage back there would just a garage or a shed would be an accessory structure. But if it's to be dwelled in, lived in, if it could have in a garage or not, it's an accessory dwelling unit. Does that make sense?
It still would qualify as an accessory structure, which elsewhere in the zoning, the guidance does not allow any accessory structure to exceed the height of the primary residence. And that's in all the other historic district neighborhoods that language can be found.
Overlay.
I think what you're referring to is historic district overlay language, maybe, but you know, it's what I've been sitting here listening to, and we've all been listening to, and we look at reading the zoning code, the section pertaining to accessory dwelling unit doesn't have it. I mean, are you saying that it does have it? I mean, if you can point us to the section that pertains to accessory dwelling units and the limitation on height, that would be helpful.
In the zoning section 8.7.4E, it also states that architectural style shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. And you really can't say that a two-story accessory structure is in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling.
Overlay district or not?
Well, hold on. I feel like I've heard two different people speaking here. Is that, are we still with Ms. Mays?
Yes, that was Ann just interjected there, yeah.
Okay, well, we just not have any interjections without being recognized.
Apologies.
Thank you.
Ms.
Mays, now.
Yes.
Say what you said again about 8.7.4E.
That's the provision that was determined to be not followed, which is the architectural style shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. And I really don't see how you can say that a two-story structure is in a similar architectural style as a one-story cottage primary house.
Yeah, that I think is the meat and potatoes that has to get determined. So anybody else wishing to speak electronically, if you could raise your hand electronically on that, because I've got people helping us here. We have a Michael. Michael, are you back on?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to it was mentioned that they found that he was not using it as a vacation, the primary residence as a vacation rental. My understanding is that reason why they determined that was that they went out to the site and no one was renting it at that moment.
I'm going to stop you here because that really is not germane to what we're doing here. I mean, if y'all think that there's been some kind of code violation, you can continue to work with the city to deal with code violations, but you can see how it's not really germane to the issue that we have.
I understand. Thank you.
Anything else from anybody electronically? Ms. Herman, the deputy city attorney is on the line, wants to speak again.
Yes, sir. Just to kind of bring this all to a head, my office reviewed Ms. Liddy's refutation of the appeal point by point, and I was of the opinion that what staff did here was appropriate and legally defensible. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Herman. Any questions for the city attorney, staff? Any questions for the petitioners? Or the appellants, I'm sorry. All right. Is there anybody else online wishing to speak? I'm going to declare this public hearing closed. All right. So I would like staff to give us our charge again succinctly.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So the petitioner has filed an appeal to the action of the zoning administrator. That action includes the zoning confirmation letter that was submitted to the applicant to answer their question regarding and I'll give you the exact language of the request. The request for the letter was requesting confirmation of the factors determining the similar architectural style as they relate to accessory dwelling units in section 8.7.4E of NUZO. Additionally, confirm how these factors are determined, i.e. through committee, by agent of the city, et cetera. And the city responded with their attached zoning confirmation letter. So they're appealing that. They're also appealing the issuance of the building permit that we've been discussing. Relative to the charge of the ZBA, per section 3.23.6, the Zoning Board of Appeals shall determine whether the first decision maker erred in the application of the interpretation of the ordinance. Once that's determined, if that determination is made, the ZBA may reverse or affirm wholly or in part, or may modify the final written decision appealed and shall make a final written decision that is in its opinion ought to be made in the case before it, unless otherwise specified by this ordinance. To this end, the Zoning Board of Appeals shall have all the powers and of the administrative official, commission, or board from whom the appeal is taken. A motion to reverse, affirm, or modify the final written decision appealed shall include a statement of the specific reasons, including the proposed findings of fact that support the decision. The findings of fact shall be based on the same evidence received by the first decision maker. If a motion to reverse or modify is not made, or such motion fails to receive the affirmative vote of a majority of the members present, then the appeal shall be denied. The appellant shall have the burden of proof.
All right. Can we go back and I just want that staff to go over this again. In that block, I mean, are there other two-story, I mean, how many two-story buildings there are in that block? Or is it all bungalows?
Should I pull up a map for you? In fact, it may be better to... see. And while we're queuing this up to answer your question, there are a number of two-story buildings in the neighborhood. This is moving a little slow.
Mr. Chairman.
So this is Park Avenue, East Park Avenue, the subject property. As you go along Park, and I'll also show you the across the lane, because that's going to be important for this discussion since the accessory building is in the back. But there are a number of houses that are two-story along Park Avenue. And then as you go over to the next block, because the lane is here, and we can't go down the lane, but that's the lane from which you can see the accessory building. And then over to Duffy, just to show the development pattern here, to answer your question.
Okay. All right. All right, any questions for staff? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Condon?
Mr. Chairman, based on the answers provided by the zoning administrator and the deputy city attorney to the questions brought in the appeal, I make a motion that we deny the appeal.
Okay, we have a motion to deny the appeal of Mr. Condon. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Merriman. All right. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Merriman?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Branch is a yes. It's a unanimous that the appeal is denied. All right, thank you very much. And I did want to tell you that if you're still on, if you are aggrieved with the decision of this board, your appeal or you have a writ of mandamus or an appeal to the Superior Court of Chatham County. All right, thank you. Any other business?
Nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Mr. Brown.
Motion to adjourn.
And Mr. Hall, he's alive. He made a motion to adjourn. All right, Mr. Hall, how do you vote to adjourn?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Merriman?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
I vote yes as well.